the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore is back from the dead. Matt, you sound better. You seem to be feeling better. You're ready to pod. You're ready to pod at like 6 a.m.
Colors are more vibrant. The air smells sweeter. I feel much better. I did nothing yesterday. I just stayed in bed and watched one of my favorite shows and read, and that's all I did and rested. It's after the trade deadline, I usually get sick just because my body's like, you need to stop now. It's been a week. You haven't slept. You need to stop now.
Yeah.
So, kind of recovered and feeling better. How is Dan Devine?
Dan Devine is just exquisite to talk to. He's lovely. He's a lovely fellow.
He's a joy.
He's a joy. He's really smart, and he's good at stringing sentences together.
Nice change of pace for you, though.
Yeah, it was a really nice change of pace for me and the listeners to actually get, like, I don't know, 20 of the 40 minutes of someone, like, you know, eloquently speaking. It was great. We talked about Power Rangers.
And he doesn't have nearly the level of hate that I do, so it's, like, an overall more, like, positive experience.
Yeah, if anything, he's just, like, overly nice and yet still, like, very measured in an analytical way about the NBA. It's great. He's great. He should.
Mahoney should have a bowling team together.
He should host this podcast.
And you're not even going to screw off.
So I figured it's time to update the Rookie of the Year race. And not so much the Rookie of the Year race, but do like a report of rookies to figure out who is actually having a good season, who's making progress, who's not. Because you wrote something great about how the Rookie of the Year race basically isn't that exciting, right?
Yeah, it's kind of sucked, is what I openly said in the column, is that this Rookie of the Year race has just been horrible. And a lot of it's... There are a lot of factors that are involved. It's not that I don't think there are any good rookies. It's that I'm used to there being one guy, at least, who's just, oh, wow. And if there's not one guy that's, oh, wow, then there's two to three guys where you're like, they are really good.
Yeah.
You know, like, to that, it's funny, because looking back, it's really funny to look at, but 2009-2010 season, it was Tyreek versus Brandon Jennings versus Stephen Curry, and everybody had their guy.
Yeah.
And eventually everybody's like, well, okay, we're going to give it to Tyreek as a 25-5 thing. And now it's like you would take Stephen Curry a million times over either one.
Well, you'd actually take James Harden, who wasn't even in the race.
Right. Right. So it's funny how that works out, but the Rookie of the Year race in and of itself is kind of interesting from that regard in terms of just being disappointing overall. It's interesting to me that it's so disappointing given how hyped this draft class was.
Yeah.
And, you know, Hornets fans have kind of been like, you know, what's really been wrong with Anthony Davis, his numbers. I'm like, his numbers are great, but even some Hornets fans have been like, what's wrong with Anthony Davis?
Because he'll go a couple of games with just, like, one rebound.
Yeah.
Which is
weird.
And then he'll
explode, and it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, his rebound rate's 15.9, which is not bad at all.
No, it's solid. That's very solid.
Yeah, and everybody, like, they'll ask me, like, what's wrong with Anthony Davis? And I'll be like, he's 19? he grew a foot and a half inside of 2 years?
Yeah, he's been this tall for, like, 19 months.
Yeah, and is still trying to feel, like, trying to understand things. He's walking into doorways and things like that,
right.
So it's going to be all right. Everything's going to be fine.
Yeah, it's funny because he has played nearly 1,000 fewer minutes than Damian Lillard.
Yeah.
Now you could argue, depending on how you want to judge basketball, and I don't mean that in the condescending way it's coming out, but depending on how you want to judge basketball, you could probably make the case that Anthony Davis has been a better basketball player than Damian Lillard this year. Now, the problem is that he's played, you know, 900 fewer minutes, 11 fewer games, and scored a lot fewer points. And the way Lillard impacts the game, sure, he's atrocious on defense, and he is a pretty good passer, but not great. I mean, he's a solid passer. He can set his guys up in a decent way. But he impacts the game by scoring. And whether it's efficient or not, it's been good enough to make them very competitive throughout the year.
That's a big part of it is, you know, it's easy for people to just go to, well, they're winning.
Right.
And I'm always like, well, LaMarcus Aldridge is better than any player on the Hornets, and he's better than any player on the Pistons.
Right.
That that right there, and then you've got Nicholas Batum, and you've got Wes Matthews, who I'm kind of turning around on slowly. And you have the conundrum that is J.J. Hickson. Is he good? Is he bad? I don't know.
Oh, no, I know. He's not good. He can get stats. He's not good.
The context is important there, but Lillard's definitely been a big part of why they're winning.
Yeah.
And I definitely get that argument. For me, with Davis, a lot of it is he didn't just have injuries. He had two injuries, which to me are not career concerning, but they're definitely ones where I'm like, well, of course he's going to have struggled.
Sure.
He had a concussion.
Sure.
Kind of a problem to process a game that's so fast as basketball coming back after a concussion. And he had the ankle thing, which was – it was really – that's a thing that's like a stress – they're worried about a stress fracture.
Yeah.
And he's got to be real tender on that. It's got to take him a while. And you throw in the natural adjustment to trying to get up to speed, and he's going to have all those issues, combined with the fact that he's rail thin playing power forward.
Yeah.
And everything else. And it makes a lot of sense to me. I'm honestly – to me it's like, he's shooting 51% from the field, and he's got a 20.7 PER. To me, I'm like – he's doing what he needs to do. He's right on track.
Sure, and he's getting nearly two blocks a game, which isn't a great indication of defense, but he does deter a lot of guys coming into the lane, even at this young age.
Right. If Anthony Davis was in JaVale McGee's spot on the Nuggets playing with Andre Miller, his numbers would be insane.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they would be absurd, and Nuggets fans would be apoplectic that he's not starting and playing more. I mean, it would be ugly, but his numbers would be ridiculous. Part of his Vasquez is a really good balance passer, not a great lob artist. Really his forte, and that's fine. Vasquez has been great, but that's part of it. Is if you got Anthony Davis, you want them running the pick and roll lob almost every play. You want a guy like Chris Paul in 2009.
What's funny is like somebody like Raymond Felton would be perfect for him because Raymond Felton does throw a nice lob.
Yeah,
and he can attack off the dribble, so you're kind of left in that no man's land. He would actually be a really fun pairing for Anthony Davis this year, but obviously that's not going to happen.
Damian Lillard, to me, is fascinating because the media loves him.
Yeah.
Right?
How could you not?
He's a guy that makes tough shots, and that's who people just fall in love with. And if you can do that consistently, like, you're a superstar in this league if you can hit tough shots consistently.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of concerns, and I've talked to scouts and people that cover the team extensively, and they back up the things that I think, which are, I don't know how much of his offense is sustainable over time, and I worry about what's going to happen when we talk about the book getting out on. Like, what's going to happen when teams really start scouting to stop him specifically? I wonder what's going to happen. Now, I don't think that means that Damian Lillard's going to turn into a 8.3 assist guy.
No, he's good for 10-4. He's good for 10-4.
Yeah,
he can do that.
I just don't know that he's going to be the star. Because of certain limitations, and there's a lot of things that go into it. Like, he's 22, which isn't ancient, but it's an older rookie, and if you're 22, you want like a huge amount of physical potential.
I think he has that.
You do?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I think he's extremely strong. He's extremely quick, and I feel like he has a much more explosive game than he's shown.
I will say his assist percentage is 29%, which is much higher than I thought it would be.
Yeah. Here's a question I have for you about him. And obviously I have subscribed to the magazine Year of the Gunner.
Right.
And I'm kind of buying into that role. And not that he's a gunner per se, but we've seen this before. We saw this with Derrick Rose's MVP year. We've seen this with guys like Allen Iverson in the past. I'm not saying he's that, but we put so much on efficiency, and it's a valid thing. Efficiency is very important. But I think you can impact the game as a guy who's not quite an efficient scorer, which he's not. He's shooting 41%. He's shooting 34% from three. He has a PER 15.7, just showing a little, like, kind of a baseline of efficiency there. But I really feel like he does impact the game with the threat of him scoring, which is not something that's really that easy to measure. However, I do feel like the threat of going off or getting a shot at any point in the game, especially when you have the ball in your hands that much, it can be a very positive effect on the focus of the defense. And I feel like he is kind of in that area of he gets the defense to focus in on him, and whether it opens everything up for the rest of the team in terms of him passing them the ball or not, I think he does affect the defense. I think there is great value in that.
Somebody was making that similar argument to me on Twitter about Rudy Gay, actually, was saying even if he's not being efficient, that the effect it has on the offense in terms of volume of points is worth it.
I mean, I made that argument about Carmelo Anthony a couple years ago, and I still believe it. I really think, like, the value of having a focus on defense for everyone to kind of gravitate towards, it can open things up for everybody else.
To me, there are degrees. I think it's one where I can definitely see that, because like we talked about earlier with the ability to make those tough shots, because I've defended Joe Johnson for a lot of years for the same reason, where I said, you know, Joe Johnson's a guy that he can hit shots which are not – no one in the league except him and a handful of guys can make.
Right.
Because he's got the – he's just got that ability, and those are shots that you need, because there are so many possessions where the defense essentially figures you out or stops you, and you are in a position where you don't get the shot you want, and somebody's going to take those. You know, and when the – you know, as much as we talk about the Spurs – when the Spurs get into that situation, since the kind of drop-off of Manu Ginobili, that's been the big concern, is when that happens, that's where they struggle. Because then sometimes, if Parker's not on the floor, it's Gary Neal or Danny Green trying to do that, and those aren't guys that can do that.
Or even when Parker is on the floor, he's not exactly like an isolate, get a step-back jumper kind of guy. Like, he can do it, but it's not something he regularly has to do.
Versus, like, Chris Paul definitely is that model.
Right.
So I get that, but the part of the – I guess the big problem with me is the degree, because it's like if Lillard was shooting 42 to 43% even, I'd be like, okay, but he's shooting 42, 41.6. That's a number that stands out, and if you have that, I really want you to be shooting 37, 38% from three to at least give me something.
Yeah, you have to be an above-average three-point shooter, which he's not.
Right, and so – that kind of trade-off is where I start to get concerned, because we'll notice the shots that he hits and we'll forget about the shots that he doesn't, and that gets to be problematic. But at the same time, you know, his turnover rate's fine.
Yeah.
He overall is a pretty efficient player. I mean, he's got a 15.7 PER, which I made this point in the podcast or in the post that I did, which is PER rewards two things: rebounding and volume shooting.
Yeah.
And so even though Lillard's a shooter, if he's still running point guard, it's hard for point guards to amass high PERs.
Right.
That's why it's amazing when guys do that. But with him, like, I don't necessarily expect that. But he's been good in all the other areas. So I think that there's been good production there, and that he's a good player. I just hesitated to put him in the. I said that he was great, but not phenomenal. Is how I described him.
I think that's fair, but I do think the age thing.
Blazers fans do not agree with
that. Sure. I do think the age thing is overstated, because we've gotten into such a mindset of get this guy in by the time he's 19 or 20, and then he can build up. 22, I mean, Lillard has learned all the things you would want a guy to learn physically from that 19 to 22 range. Yeah. And then really when you see guys explode, I mean, not everybody. There are the prodigies like Durant and Kyrie and Westbrook and guys like that can come in right away and have that understanding of the game. But really, for most young players who become all-stars and superstars, around 22, 23 is when they need to start learning the game. Well, Lillard doesn't have to put in the, oh, I got to learn how to be physically fit for the league. He is physically fit. And so now he's in that range of learning the league. And if he came out next year, averaged, you know, 21 and 7, and shot 43-44% from the field, it would not shock me at all, because I feel like physically he's learned how to play in the NBA even in just 56 games. Like, he's never overmatched.
So here's a one that we get into a lot. I tend to underrate guys' athleticism. It's just a trend that I notice I do, and I'm wrong in a lot of instances. Like, I didn't really think of Taj Gibson as like a really athletic guy, and then like I paid more attention and was like, oh, okay, that was completely wrong. Do you consider Lillard to have a lot of athleticism potential in terms of being able to explode and really jump and the kinds of not just like physical attributes, but burst and explosiveness and finish.
I do. Here's the reason. He's done it in college. He did it. These are bad examples for the NBA, but just like based off what I've seen, he's done it in college. He did it in summer league, and he's done it a couple of times in the NBA where he does have that quick burst. I think even with him being physically fit, his diet can still improve. He can still get into better core shape, and that's really where guys learn that explosiveness is when they shed out the bad diet, which guys eventually do if they take their career that seriously. Which
right.
I think Lillard has shown that he's almost got that Derrick Rose focus of I'm just gonna keep working to get better. Like everything you hear about him is he's a complete gym rat, which a lot of these guys are, but he's a complete gym rat with special talent,
yeah.
Which is where I think that it wouldn't shock me if he's attacking the rim explosively, you know, 2 years from now when he's hitting that 24-25 range. Do you not agree? Which is fine. I understand if somebody doesn't. I just, for me, like, I feel like I see that from him.
I mean, here's an interesting case, right, is O.J. Mayo didn't have that. He really didn't.
Right.
He's never been a guy that had burst.
Right.
This year, I've actually seen it from him. Like, he's just developed it. Like I've seen him this year, he actually burst in dunks, and I have never seen that from him.
Yeah.
It's like getting away from Lionel Hollins and imbued him with superpowers. It's amazing. Like, and that's a much you know, an advanced age. So.
Oh, the power for not just getting through atrophy through your entire body from a lack of confidence.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about some other guys. I think the next guy we got to talk about is Waiters.
Yeah. If you don't want to hear about Deion Waiters, shed the next 20 minutes of this podcast.
So just put this out there. Of guys that play significant minutes, Waiters, like the only guy to play over 40 minutes, or 40 games rather, he has the highest points per 36 of any of them.
Sure.
At 17.8. Chris Copeland's played in 33 games, but he only averages 7, like very few minutes a game. He's averaged 19.9, which again, maybe he should be playing more. But Waiters, 17.8, 3.8 assists, which is, you know, pretty good. 3.0 rebounds. He's not really asked to do that. And the shooting splits are on the season 41, 31, 76.
Right.
Cavs fans will scream. He's shooting better than, I think, 51% in the month of February.
Yeah, he's shooting 52.3% from the field in February. He's shooting 19% from three-point range in February.
But attacking the rim more? And,
yeah.
And,
well, no, not really.
Well, if he was to. I've been told by Cavs fans repeatedly he's attacking the rim more.
I mean, technically that's true. He averaged 5.3 shots in the restricted area from the start of the season through January. And this month he's averaging 6.0. So technically he is attacking the rim more.
Well, there you go. Convincing.
Yeah, exactly.
My big thing with Deion Waiters is this. It's never one thing about him. Sometimes there's one thing that sticks out with you. You know, he had the conditioning issue this summer, and everyone was like, that was the summer. He was fine when he got into camp. I'm like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Right? But that was one thing. And then you had the poor shot selection to begin the year. And we've seen that repeatedly come back. And then you have things where he gets in these funks mentally, and it's hard for him to get out of it. And I worry about that because, you know, you talk about the year of the gunner. Like, one thing with a lot of gunners is they have a certain attitude that will infect their entire game. Jamal Crawford's kind of different, where Crawford's bad at defense because he's physically unable to. Like, he just doesn't – he's not programmed to.
Yeah.
But I think the effort and the want to is there, and he's actually had a few years where he was pretty good defensively. People love to scream at him being bad defense, but I looked at a couple stuff a couple of years ago, and I haven't really paid as much of attention this year for the Clippers as I need to. But in general, he's had some years where he hasn't been terrible and some years where he's been really bad. But the Hawks, he was actually really good.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is that you need to figure out how to hide him on defense but still keep him in the system, right?
So I worry about these things with Waiters where I look at all of the elements combined and I'm like, I have a lot of concerns about that guy long term because I don't see, you know, I do not see the kind of Dwayne Wade athleticism. I don't see the kind of Dwayne Wade ability to take over a game.
Yeah.
You know, you could see that early. I saw that at Marquette, and you saw that his first year in the NBA. With Waiters, I see a guy that could very well wind up as yet another gunner.
Here's a question I have for you, playing devil's advocate. Is that fair to compare him to Dwayne Wade?
No, but I also, it's one where I even look at him in terms of, I'm trying to think of a comparable shooter. I look at him, like even at Marcus Thornton, really. I mean, he's way more athletic than Marcus Thornton.
Yeah, that's a comparison I like.
But I like Thornton's shot selection. I like Thornton's management of the game. I like the way that he moves inside of an offense. And I love his mentality. Thornton, and honestly, like, I think Thornton in a couple of years inside of a good defensive system is going to be a plus defender. I really do. He was good for a short time with Byron Scott. And
he also didn't play because he was so bad defensively.
Some, yeah. But I still feel like he's got the potential to be able to get there because he's got the mentality. He wants to attack. He's just got to get the right kind of coaching, which he's not getting in Sacramento.
Here's just a quick comparison with Waiters. Something that popped in my head while you were talking, and you made the Wade comparison. I was trying to think, all right, body type, the way he plays, like in terms of not a great athletic body, but still the way he attacks. It made me think of Randy Foy's rookie year. And if you look up the comparisons in rookie year, Foy was actually a much better shooter, but kind of similar. Like a lot of similarities there.
See, those are things that concern me, where it's like, you know, he's kind of like Randy Foy, only not as good.
Yeah, no, I didn't mean that as positive, and I don't mean that as a straight across the board comparison, but I just thought I'd look it up, and aside from the shooting, Waiters does turn the ball over a lot less than Foy did. But Foy, I don't even know how to spin that, but I would just say Foy was not put in situations where not turning the ball over was an option.
Right.
It was kind of a weird, like, they really asked him to be the primary ball handler, which Waiters doesn't have to be. But at the same time, Waiters still takes care of the ball a lot better. But yeah, a lot of similarities there. Not a positive.
I have this huge thing with Cavs fans about Waiters, and it comes down to they want me to say, they want to make it into the idea that I'm saying he's a bust and he's terrible. I am never going to say that about a rookie. I'm just not. Never said that.
What about Austin Rivers?
No, I've said that, but not even Rivers. Like, Rivers, I honestly think has a little bit of hope there.
Okay, good, because I do too.
Like, I think the only guy that I've really ever felt that about from the get-go and stuck with it was Hasheem Thabeet. That was the only guy where I was like, nope, this is not going to happen.
Because of his high butt?
Because of his high butt. That's exactly accurate. I just can't really. But the part of it is when I do these analysis, you know, when I'm talking about these things in columns or on Twitter or wherever, I'm just talking about what's happening. You know, I can look at Damian Lillard and be like, "Wow, that's a really great play," or "Wow, that's a really great find," or, you know, he didn't really, you know, he missed that cut, or he shouldn't have dribbled into those guys, or that was a bad shot. I'm not saying that Waiters is going to be bad forever. At all. I think that there's every opportunity that Waiters could improve. And they want me to say he's improving now. And I think after February, you could say, okay, he had a good month.
Right.
And if that month carries over into March and April, God, yeah, he really has come a long way. And that's totally accurate. But that doesn't mean that when I said that he was really struggling, I didn't like what I've seen from him, I was off. Because I also saw really good things from him back in December when I saw him play the Nuggets. I watched him in person. I was like, oh, wow, this. Like, I liked some of his shot selection. He was moving well without the ball. And I was like, oh, I kind of like this. And then he regressed. And so it just depends on. To me, it's all a matter of what kind of shots he's taking. He's taking open looks off of the driving catch. If he's letting Kyrie create for him, great, awesome.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And maybe that's where you have to trust coaching to Byron Scott moving forward. Which, if Cavs fans do, I'm totally fine with that. I am also not saying that this guy's a bust. I still don't think he was the right pick in terms of fit next to Irving.
Right.
Just because I think there are guys who play better off the ball than Waiters. Not that he can't learn that, but I didn't like the fit of it. With that said, my concern with him is one, finishing at the rim, which before this month it was 45% in the restricted area, which is horrendous. Like, that's really bad. Like, that's Brandon Jennings, Ricky Rubio territory in terms of finishing at the rim. The difference is between him and Rubio at the rim is Rubio doesn't get there that often. Waiters gets there a decent amount. And if he's not finishing, that's a problem. Now, this month, where he is shooting 52% from the field, he's finishing at 60% in the restricted area, which is huge. That's really good. Now, is that going to be definite improvement that moves forward? Can he hover in that 55 to 60 range? I don't know. I just don't know that I see an improvement in decision-making with him, which is my biggest concern. Is that not that he needs to figure that out as a rookie, but he hasn't shown it really so far. And you do have to hammer that out of him early on in his career.
Yeah.
That's the concern. Not that it's never going to happen, but that's something like you look at guys like Nick Young and Jordan Crawford or any guard who's not John Wall who's played for the Wizards. You look at those guys and that didn't get hammered out of them early. Byron Scott, I think, is a good guy to do that. But the player has to be willing, and I don't know that we've seen one way or the other that Waiters is willing to think about that in a positive way.
Here's a good thing. It's great to be a gunner who works inside the flow of the offense, even if you're not that efficient.
Sure.
The worst is when you're a ball-dominant gunner.
Sure.
That, to me, is the big key. You cannot be ball-dominant. You cannot be a guy that the ball sticks with you, and you wind up trying to make all these plays. Now, the assist totals are great, but I don't think that Waiters is ever going to be in a position to be a huge playmaker. That's not what they're going to want him to do. They've got Kyrie Irving.
Right.
You know, and Irving's a scorer primarily, but he's also a really great passer.
And the weird thing is that you look at, like, with Derrick Rose early on, we said, and maybe we still say this, is that he needed a guy to play off the ball who could attack off the dribble, which he did. Like, that would be very helpful to him to where he wouldn't have to do so much. And you can look at Irving and say, well, he needs something similar, and then look at Waiters and say, well, he can attack off the dribble. And he does, but your point of the ball sticking with him a little too long is I think, the concern there. And not that he can't iron that out, but that is a concern, is that you want a guy who doesn't kill the flow of the offense.
Right. Yeah, you look at some shooting guards or some guards with similar field goal percentages for him.
Like, yeah.
Brandon Knight has the same percentage as he does from the floor, but he's shooting 37% from three.
Yeah.
Deshaun Stevenson has the same percentage, but he's shooting 41% from three. You get down the list, and it's pretty similar, where even guys that are worse than him, almost all of them have better percentages from three, so their EFG is going to be higher.
I'm actually really shocked that Waiters is such a bad three-point shooter. I mean, I didn't expect him to be a good one, but 30% is a lot lower. Like, I expected maybe 33, 34%. And, I mean, that's a significant drop.
He's no Dwight Howard.
Sure.
What really bothers me is when automatically this conversation turns into, any sort of conversation about Waiters turns into, well, Beal's shooting's just about the same. And it makes me crazy. I just go nuts over that because I'm like, they're not, like, why are we talking about, they're in totally different situations. They're in completely different situations. Why are we really talking about this? I don't get it. I just cannot understand why we have to immediately compare them. And Beal shooting, you know, 40.2% from the field, but he's shooting 38% from three. And his improvement was pretty marked. And you had a fantastic piece on this
Thank
week.
Thank you.
Talking about the like what happened when John Wall came back.
And something I didn't put into that post that I should have, just to cut you off real quick, is that John Wall's return allowed A.J. Price to be a backup point guard. Which is huge, because he can't be a starting point guard, and when he gets in that backup role, he plays better, and it's a trickle-down effect of roles, of guys fitting into their needed roles, and that's helped everybody overall. But continue.
Yeah, and I like A.J. Price. Like, I think that, you know, he does play really well as a backup.
Yeah.
He's really solid. With me, from the beginning, and we're talking about this qualitative thing, where quantitatively, I can say, all right, well, maybe they're pretty similar, but qualitatively, I look at Beal's shots and I go, that's a good shot. That's a good look. That was a good play. And I look at Waiters and I go, what are you doing? Are you high? And he's doing that less, and that's good.
Sure.
But the reason, I mean, Beal started to get it earlier because, you know, Wall came back and he started to improve. And you can say Waiters, you know, Irving was out for a long time too. And that's totally fair to say. I just feel like there is a qualitative difference in terms of the decision-making between the two.
Sure. Absolutely.
And that's a big part with me, but...
And, I mean, God, Beal with John Wall back in the lineup is... Like, he's a really good player in his role. He doesn't try to create too much. He doesn't like. He's not. I actually think he should be running more like side pick and rolls because I like what he does in that. Yeah. But he comes off screens ready to shoot, and the fact that every 3-pointer he's made has been assisted since John Wall returned is phenomenal to me. Yeah. It doesn't mean he's not taking them off the dribble. It's just that like he's very good shooting off the catch.
And he's improved every single month. Like he's just getting better.
Yeah.
And that's really what you want to see. And he's got a really strong understanding of it. I talked to him and he's good kid too. He's got a really great attitude. He was, very much just excited for the team and for everything. And I think he's got the kind of, he's got kind of like a star personality where I can see him being a legit star in this league.
Yeah.
There have been questions about whether or not he would be whether he's developing into a Rookie of the Year candidate. I mean, he's a Rookie of the Year candidate only because the field is so terrible.
Sure.
But there's nothing he can do to make up for that start that's going to get him past Lillard. Yeah. He would have to finish with just an absolutely absurd March and April for him to be in a conversation even.
Yeah.
To me, like, Lillard's just that far above.
Another comparison that I just decided to look up with Waiters is Alexi Shved. And it's eerily similar. Shved is down 2 in PER, but the shooting percentages are almost exactly the same. He's not taking nearly as many shots as Waiters, but the shooting percentages in terms of true shooting and effective field goal percentage are almost identical. And Shved has been bad for a month and a half, like just a bad, bad player that doesn't attack enough. But like it's just kind of interesting to see for a season long how close they are in a lot of areas.
Let's talk MKG.
I'd love to. I love this guy.
I love him too. I want to be measured and fair. And so I have to bring up the idea that, if his offense does not improve, then he's basically Trevor Ariza, right?
I disagree.
Okay, why?
Because I don't think that... Well, I mean, one, he hits... He actually can make shots, I feel like. He's not a good three-point shooter. But I feel like he attacks in a much different way.
Just in terms of getting to the rim?
Yes. Okay. Ariza can't handle the ball. And I feel like MKG has a very good handle for his position.
It's a turnover rate. Yeah, 14% turnover rate, which isn't bad.
Yeah. I think the thing with him is everyone hoped he'd be Andre Iguodala coming in, right?
Right.
And he's just not the playmaker that Iggy is. Like, at all. Like, he's not a guy that really sets other guys up.
Look at his shooting splits. I mean, you're right, because, Ariza this year is shooting 40% from the field, and MKG's shooting 45%.
Yeah.
And even with Ariza shooting 32% from three, which is way better than MKG's 22%. Still, like, the gap is pretty big when you're talking about guys that drive.
Yeah. MKG's also taken nine threes.
Right.
I mean, that he just doesn't take them.
I love his defense. I love his potential as a rebounder. I love his potential as, the playmaking is a factor, because I think that's what's going to hold him out of being the kind of stat stuffer.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Gerald Wallace, Josh Smith, kind of from 2006 kind of deal.
Well, I actually think he would be more in line to be Gerald Wallace.
Yeah.
Than anybody. He's not a great passer, but at the same time, he does everything else.
Yeah.
And doesn't really take shots outside of what he's good at. I mean, if you look at his the zones he's shooting from. Like, he at the rim, he takes four attempts a game. 3 to 9 feet, he doesn't even take one attempt. 10 to 15 feet, he doesn't even take half an attempt. 16 to 23 feet, he's taking two attempts a game, which is, and he's only hitting 25% of that, which that's a concern, but that doesn't concern me enough down the road to where I don't think he can fix that. Because I actually think his shooting motion is very fixable. Like, there isn't a lot of noise in there. There isn't a lot of wasted movement. It's pretty clean. They're just like, you need to tweak an elbow here and there. You need to tweak the follow through a little bit. But I think for the most part, his shooting motion is pretty good.
If he goes to IMG in the summer and gets a shot rebuilt, I think that'll do him a world of good.
Yeah. But I love the effect he has on a game. Like I think he doesn't concern me at all long term. Now maybe he's not going to be Andre Iguodala like we hoped, but even if he turns out to be Gerald Wallace, you know, circa 2004 to 2008, that's a good player.
It's a really good player.
It's not a player you build your franchise around. Well, the Bobcats have before, but it's not a player you should build your franchise around. But that's a really good player to have on your team. And that there becomes such this emphasis to every high pick has to be a home run, right?
Yeah.
Even if you turn them into a double, like, that's still good. As long as you don't whiff on the high picks, I think you're doing a good job. Like, if you can get a top six, top seven guy, top six, like, rotation guy on your team with every lottery pick, you eventually become a very good team.
Yeah, you do. You absolutely do. I mean, it's, you know, the busts are really extreme.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I mean, one case doesn't really get talked about as much as Joe Alexander.
Right.
That was a bad pick.
That was a very bad pick.
That one went badly very quickly. And watching the Bucks bloggers, Frank Madden, who I love from Brew, watch Joe Alexander at Summer League was just sad.
Yeah.
It was not a happy time.
No.
So we should talk about Solinger, even with him being out. We should probably touch on him.
Yeah, I'd love to.
What's his role? Where is he going to be in this league?
He's a rebounding seventh man, which for the 22nd pick, 21st pick, that's good value.
Better or worse than Amir Johnson?
I would say I don't know. They're just such different players.
Yeah.
If you put Solinger next to a good defender, I think he's fine.
Like KG.
Right. That's the thing.
That's what I went nuts over is, you know, Celtics fans talking about, like, oh, look at all these teams that whiffed on him. And it's like, well, no, like, he landed in the right spot. Like, the draft worked.
Right.
Like, the draft process worked for him.
Right.
Because it wound up putting him on a team that he needed to be on with the kind of surrounding talent he needed to be on so he could thrive. And that's what you want, is you want guys to be put in positions where they can succeed. If Dion Waiters was, like, the 20th pick playing for, like, the Mavericks, like, I think he'd be in a great position. I'd probably have, you know, much different expectations and be like, you know, this kid can play a little bit.
But the thing with him that's frustrating is doesn't have anything to do with him. It's that, and I mean, we go through this with a lot of Celtics players. There's the reaction from the fan base, from the diehards of the fan base that want everything to be great.
Yeah.
And it's not just a Celtics thing, but they're louder than most fan bases. And then there's a pushback against that to try to get them to be more measured, and it ends up being just as extreme the other way.
Yeah,
and so you get like this really, you get two very unrealistic realities of what Jared Solinger is because of like the checks and balances of it all, and both, you know, both sides end up being wrong. He ends up being somewhere in the middle.
He's not Zach Randolph and he's not Reggie Evans. He's somewhere in the middle.
Exactly, and the thing with him is there are those concerns with guys who were projected to be high lottery picks at one point and then phase back in the draft for various reasons. Darrell Arthur wasn't a high lottery pick, but I think he was around the end of the lottery, correct? Initially, in terms of like projections. And then he fell because of a kidney concern. And he's been good when he gets to play, but he's had injury concerns that aren't kidney related, but are just, you know, kind of unfortunate. And then you have guys like DeJuan Blair, who had huge knee concerns and turned out to be like pretty decent early on, to the fact where people were like, how did he drop into the second round? But turns out, like, hey, that's a second round player, which isn't a bad thing, but he's not a guy that you need in your regular rotation.
God, after that rookie year, I remember people being like, he's a star. The Spurs have found their successor to Tim Duncan.
Exactly. Like, yeah, like that. The only guy that I can really think of who has kind of bucked that trend is DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah. I think the thing with Solinger is you worry about whether or not he can score around the rim. And, you know, it was pretty inconsistent because there were games where he was just blocked and completely shut out, just couldn't get anywhere close to it. And there were games where he was able to basically smart and hustle his way into points. And it's really a night-by-night thing. It's really, against some teams, he's going to be really impressive, and against some teams, he's going to really struggle.
Do you see a comparison, like a straight across the board comparison to him and DeJuan Blair? Because the more I'm thinking about it, I mean, I guess Blair was more above the rim than Sullinger.
Blair's got a little bit more bulk, and while Sullinger's got that huge butt on him,
he's got an Andre Miller butt.
I feel like Blair's got more overall size and the ability to put on it. Now, at the same time, Sullinger's probably going to be able to develop a better mid range.
Yeah, and I do really like his touch.
Like that's something that you have to have in this league is power forward. Is you got to have that mid range.
Yeah, especially now.
You know, if you're not a massive guy that happens to play the four instead of the five, you really got to be able to face up and hit that jumper. And so if he's able to hit that, then that's going to help him out a lot. It's just a matter of whether or not he's able to consistently.
Yeah, I'm looking at the comparisons between Blair's rookie year and Sullinger's rookie year. And although, you know, Sullinger's was cut short, and that's not a great, like a real fair comparison, there is quite a difference in just a lot of numbers across the board.
Yeah.
Especially rebounding. Which Sullinger's a good rebounder at 17.4%, but Blair was 20.6%. Like he was elite as a rookie.
You know who we don't talk about a whole lot is Harrison Barnes.
There's
not a whole lot of discussion about him.
Yeah, because he's not featured. This is going to come off as a completely wrong comparison, but hear me out. Let me flesh this out. He reminds me of James Harden in the fact that he is on a higher profile team than we expected. He is way in the background of that team because of other younger players, but I think he'll emerge as just as good as those players in terms of how he fits into the role of that team in a couple of years. Now, he's not going to be James Harden. They don't play the same. He's not going to be as good as James Harden. But in that sense of we forget about him now, but I think in a couple of years we're going to be like, oh, that guy's a big part of their core.
Yeah, I agree. I like a lot of it. I don't really understand why they're so urgent to try. Like they've been trying to find a replacement small forward all year, and I don't really get it because, like, to me, his defense is fine for a rookie, and their system is going to be able to make up for it. Not right now. Right now, because their entire defense is melted into a puddle.
And he's a solid shooter across the board. He's not what everyone thought he was going to be coming out of high school, but he's still, I don't know, I just see a lot of potential there that I think he'll capitalize on pretty soon.
Yeah, I like it too. I think that I'm right there with you. I think that, you know, maybe the assist totals could be higher, or his percentages rather, and the rebounding percentages, like he needs to do more and make sure he's not just a spot-up guy, so he's not Marvin Williams, but,
sure.
You know, I like his aggressiveness too as part of it.
Yeah, and he's aggressive in the right moments. Like he doesn't just go like put his head down and hope for the best. Like he's very measured, and maybe that's that extra year of college he had, or you know, playing for who he played for and being the focus or whatever. But he's figured it. Like he knows exactly. All right, I need to attack at this point. I don't have it. I'm gonna move the ball. Like he's not a ball stopper, which is rare for a rookie that plays in that kind of system. Like I think about, they're not the same type of player, but I think about Derek Williams last year and how, well, even a lot this year, of he got the ball and then just had to, like, survey everything and, like, all right, now I still need to make that swing pass, whereas Barnes catches the ball and he knows what to do with it, like, immediately.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I really like a lot. And the other night I saw him, he went into the post and had, like, a turnaround and out of the post, and I was like, hey.
Yeah.
I mean, part of it also is there's so much that he can learn to do. You can tell he's like his toolbox could be just massive.
Yeah,
in a couple of years, it could be a really extensive one with a lot of options. And that's, to me, that's a lot of it too. Is what can they learn? Where can they get better?
Right. Should we talk about?
He may have the most potential, honestly, of any of the rookies outside maybe Andre Drummond.
What about Anthony Davis?
I guess just in terms of skill set, because I feel like Davis is going to be able to do tons really well, but like I don't think that Davis is ever going to like develop a drop step hook or have a whole extensive framework of stuff he can do.
Yeah, like, I don't.
He's going to be really good at what he does.
Yeah, I don't know that I agree with that, but I definitely don't think that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Jonas Valanciunas.
Yeah.
I love this guy. I think he has been pretty spectacular considering everything that's gone on this season with him and the team.
He was made out to be such a savior, too. As part of it, it's like, you know, if I judge him without expectations, I think that, quality starting center within 4 years.
Sure.
Is kind of where I get to with him. I don't think he's going to be some sort of defensive monster. I don't think he's going to be some sort of offensive monster. I just think he's going to be really solid all around and a guy that you want on your team because of what he's willing to do for you. I like his effort a lot.
I honestly think we could see him become 70 to 75% of what Tyson Chandler is.
Wow.
I really think he's that type of role player. He doesn't do anything outside of what he's asked to do. I think the way he protects the rim, even though he doesn't block a ton of shots, Tyson Chandler was never a big shot blocker, but he protected the rim really well, and I see a lot of that in Valanciunas. I think he's a very good rebounder. I love what I see from him, and my favorite part of his game is that really awkward pump fake that seems to work.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason you should ever buy into that, and yet he's got good shooting touch. But he's got good shooting touch from the free throw line, like not from mid range. Like, he just doesn't make mid range shots a whole lot. And so I love that works because of the way he sells it. It's very much an Andre Kirilenko pump fake. And I think he understands his role so well already, and I think he's going to understand it incredibly well moving down the line. Like, the turnovers concern me a little bit. He turns the ball over a lot for, I think, his turnover percentage is 17.2, which for a big man, that seems high. But I really think 3-4 years from now, dude's just going to be a monster in his role.
I still like him better than Tristan Thompson long term, and I like Tristan Thompson a lot. So,
I think I do. I don't know about a lot more. I think I do like him better. I don't know how much better. It's weird because it really depends on what Cleveland like puts into that lineup, right? Like who they bring in. Like, I could see plenty of scenarios where Thompson is a much better fit, and I could see plenty of scenarios where Valanciunas is a much better fit.
Right.
I think it just depends on where they go with the structure of that team.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see how he develops. I want to see him next year because he had some injury problems this year, and I want to see him kind of, you know, how it works out. I'll say this. I want to see him when he develops an attitude because you have to have such a tough one to play center in this league.
Yeah.
And there have been multiple instances, and this is not fair. I can admit that it's not fair. But Hansborough punked him. Caron Butler punked him. There have been a number of guys that have kind of pulled some shenanigans on him.
Yeah.
And you want to see him kind of, like, I want to see him get to a point in his career where he's like, that's not going to be happening. You cannot mess with me.
I do like how aggressive he is around the basket when he gets the ball.
Yeah.
It's one play, but he had this great pump fake from like 20 feet on Nene, got a step on him, and just threw it down right in his face. And it was one of those things where it is that attitude that you talk about. And he was like fired up about it. He's screaming as he comes back down the court. Like, those are the type of plays you want to see from that guy because you're right. He does need that attitude to play center in this league.
Here's a guy that I love probably more than anybody that we've talked about. John Henson.
Yeah.
This kid's going to be good.
He's going to be really good. He's the guy in this draft, even as much as Drummond, where I think people are going to be furious that he was passed on 5-6 years from now.
I went to scout North Carolina, Kentucky next year for the draft. I went to watch it just to be able to get like a review so I'd be more knowledgeable about the draft last year, which obviously has worked out great for me because they're all terrible.
Sure. But
I noticed I was watching Henson in warm-ups, and I was like, man, like he could shoot. And so I was talking to scout about it. I was like, Henson can actually hit that mid-range. And he's like, well, it's weird because he doesn't really use it in the game very much, so you don't know really what to take of it. But I noticed, like, his stroke was just really fluid, and he actually hit a big one in that game. And it was funny because it would happen throughout the year versus North Carolina where Henson would hit that shot, and the fans would be like, well, what are we going to do when John Henson's hitting mid-range shots? And I was always like, but Henson can hit it. He's he's actually got that shot. And so it's not surprising me that he's got a little bit of that. I mean, he's got a 17.7% rebound rate this year.
Yeah.
Like, out the box.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really good. That's really good. I like his efficiency. He's got a 47% effective field goal percentage, but he's a big guy, so he's not going to take threes.
Yeah, he's only taken three this year or something like that.
Right, he's at 47% field goal percentage on the year, which for a big you want over 50%, but he's going to be more of a kind of a stretch four kind of guy, so I actually don't mind it. I like his effort. I like his knowledge of the floor. I like where he fits on the team. He's got 16.9 PER. I love John Henson. He's great.
And the comparison that I hadn't thought about, but once it was presented to me, was defensively, I believe this was back in the summer, David Thorpe made a comparison defensively to what Andre Kirilenko does. And I'd always thought of Henson as a stretch four, maybe a five in some systems. But now I can kind of see that 3-4 hybrid a lot more. And thinking about him as that kind of free safety, because he's so long, because he has such long strides, seeing him kind of guard good wing players and then attack the paint to protect the basket, I could totally see that from him. Maybe not as good as Kirilenko, but that type of defender.
Yeah. So Drummond.
Ugh. I miss him.
He's good.
He's very good. He's very good. He's very good in limited minutes, which concerns me a little bit.
Yeah, but I just feel like is Frank being concerned.
Yeah.
I don't see any reason not to let the guy go out there and roll. And it's like, if he struggles, I honestly am like, what, does it really matter? I mean, your season fell apart pretty quick. As soon as they went on that 8-game losing streak, it should have been like, well, that's it.
Yeah. The weird thing with him is that you don't want him out there getting hacked all the time and remaining a 36% free throw shooter to where that gets in his head. But you also don't want to take him out constantly because you're worried about that getting in his head to where it gets in his head in a different way. So there is that weird balance of, I understand the restriction in minutes with him, and I think that you, with a guy like him, there were concerns about his motor and his willingness to put the work in and all that crap going into the draft, which I think were valid concerns. And while he's shown that maybe they weren't 100% true early on, because it does look like he's working extremely hard and doing the work he's supposed to, I think there is something to be said for making a guy earn minutes as a young player. And so I don't know, it's this weird balance that I see Lawrence Frank trying to, he's trying to walk that line, and it can be frustrating for fans. And I agree with it and don't agree with it at the same time. There's this very weird balance with how you bring him along.
My problem is basically that Frank wants to run a young team as a veteran team.
Yeah.
Because he wants to win. He wants to save his job, and I get that.
Sure.
But it's also you would do so much better if you were losing games, but the fans were like, man, I got to go to the Palace to see Drummond.
Yeah.
Then, oh man, we're only four games out of the eighth spot.
Right.
You know?
That is a thing where you would love for Joe Dumars to go to Lawrence Frank and say, hey, for the next 3 years, I know we're not going to be very good. Play the young guys. Your job is safe.
Yeah.
That's really what you want to hear.
You want to hear Greg Monroe and Andre Drummond need to play together. That's what we need to learn, is we need to figure out immediately if those two are going to work on the floor together.
Right.
And if it doesn't work well, great at the beginning, we could take some time with it. But I need to know within 2 years whether I need to break these guys up or not.
Exactly.
Interesting note, by the way, Drummond has 1.7 steals per 36, and he is one of the league of the highest amongst the rookies in steal percentage as well.
Yeah.
He just generates a lot of steals.
He has
an effort thing. That's getting on the floor and taking the ball away.
Yeah, he has that cliched nose for the ball. But he actually has it.
He's so dramatically different than what I thought he was going to be coming out of the draft and what he looked like in college. It's just amazing to me.
Yeah.
And to me, it's not even so much he's everything that the people that thought he was good thought he would be. It's no, he's different and better.
Right.
He's just this whole other model of guy. And it's really been amazing. And I love watching him play. He's a lot of fun to watch. Some of the other guys, real quick, that we should go through before we sign off today. Jay Crowder, I like a lot.
Yeah.
Not so much?
No, I like him. I don't know how much... Like, he's not a guy I definitely want in my rotation moving forward. He's also not a guy that if he ended up in my rotation, I would feel bad about it. Like, I think the potential's there, but as of right now, he's just kind of like a... Yeah, he's all right.
Need to shoot better.
Yeah. That's
the big thing. Yeah. Shot better, it'd be all right.
Yeah, for sure.
Arnett Moultrie not getting time in Philadelphia is a disaster. Just a disaster. That whole team is a disaster. Collins coaching this year has been a disaster.
You see Doug's comments about the game last night?
I caught half of it. I was watching it last night. God. I caught the part where he was talking about... He made a comment about Pat Summitt, didn't he? And then...
Yeah.
What are you referring to?
Well, my favorite was... He said Nikola Vucevic had 19 rebounds, Spencer Hawes had one. Like, the fact that he called that out was hilarious to me. It was so great.
Which is funny, because he wouldn't play Vucevic last year. Like, in the playoffs, I was screaming for Vucevic. I was like, you need to put the rookie out there. He'll actually defend KG better than Hawes will.
Yeah.
Hawes is terrified of extending to 15.
Right.
He's so terrified about giving up the interior layup, he lets KG shoot relentlessly from the perimeter. You actually need a rookie who's dumb enough to be like, no, I'm just going to go guard the guy.
Yeah.
Like, you have to abandon logic and reason against the Celtics a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Because they'll kill you with that mid-range, and it made me crazy.
Austin Rivers, I've said this, I think he will become a decent rotation player. I really do. I think putting him on the floor with shooters and letting him have space to operate, you don't obviously mold a team around him, but there are ways you can use him almost in like a very light version of how teams used to use, like I'm talking about like the Hawks and maybe into the Mavericks stint a little bit, how they use Jason Terry. Like he's not the same player, but I think you can use him in a similar manner.
You know, we talk about you're the gunner and the guys that are just willing to take shots and be aggressive and the effect that has.
Yeah.
I'll say a high-ranking member of New Orleans management told me a couple weeks ago that they like the fact that Rivers is relentless in driving.
Yeah.
Like, even if he's not finishing, that's okay, because he needs to be getting to the rim. Now, the question is, well, why do we bag on Deion Waiters? We bag on Austin Rivers, too.
Right.
Because if you ask us, like, is Deion Waiters bad? And we're going to be like, well, mostly, yeah. If you ask us about Austin Rivers, even more so, yeah.
Yeah, no, but Austin Rivers is really bad right now. Yeah. But I think you can use him in a certain way to emphasize his skills.
Like, there's not a rookie I'm looking at this list and looking at a rookie that I'm like, oh, it's time to give up on him.
Right.
Like, he's going to be terrible. There's not a single one.
Right.
There's just not. I think Terrence Jones is going to find a place in this league. I love what Mody Hunis is showing for Houston right now. You know, like, Andrew Nicholson's been great for Orlando, as much as we were irritated with Magic fans in the beginning, they've kind of come to accept the reality of the situation. But, you know, Nicholson's got good rebound rates. He's got he's shooting 53% from the field. I like Nicholson a lot.
Yeah, I like him a little. Like, he's solid. I don't know how much his game grows, but he's a good role player to have. Guy I want to mention real quick, John Jenkins. That guy, I think, is already one of the best shooters in the league.
Wow.
That guy's stroke is so pure, and I think he is going to be a ridiculous weapon in an offense that utilizes a lot of three-point shooters down the road.
They like him a lot.
Yeah.
They like him a lot there.
I really think he is going to be, in a couple of years, he'll be a top-five shooter in the league in terms of three-pointers. Like, that guy has one of the best shooting strokes I've ever seen.
Oh, Schvedt. What are your perceptions of Schvedt?
I like him when he drives the basket.
Yeah.
Teams are being extremely physical with him, and it's not that he's not getting calls. It's just that he doesn't know how to draw fouls yet. And he thinks he's drawing fouls, but he's not, and so he's bailing on plays. And then it discourages him from driving to the basket because he's not doing it properly. I love him moving forward. I think in a couple of years he'll be a really solid player. But the fans that overreacted early on and said, oh my God, it's like we have two Rubios. I think we've seen clearly that we do not have two Rubios in Minnesota.
Right. real quick, Jeremy Lamb, people that talk about, oh, he's in the D-League, don't forget about that, okay? It's like Oklahoma City and Houston are the same. They use their D-League extensively.
Yeah.
Like, they just do. They want you to develop. They have certain things they want you to work on, and they don't want you to be messing with the roster in the meantime, because part of it, and Doe talks about this, teams usually don't practice a lot during the year. They just don't.
Yeah.
Like, you're tired. You're traveling a lot. There's no time for it. The coaches know they have to give their guys time. They only really practice when they're like, we have to shore this up. Like, we got to fix this.
Right. I am not a Jeremy Lamb fan. I'm not big on him for the future. But the way his rookie year has gone so far, I don't have a problem with it. I almost think it's smarter to use him so much in the D-League. Or no, I do think it's smarter to use him the way they've used him, because you have a title-contending team in Oklahoma City. Why the hell would you play Jeremy Lamb? He is not going to add anything that Kevin Martin doesn't already do. And Kevin Martin does a lot better. So I just, like, there's absolutely no reason for him to be on the court for that Thunder team. And if there's no reason for him to be on the court, then he should be in the D-League. He needs to be playing somewhere.
I'm sure that there are guys that we have not commented on. We can't talk about every single rookie as much as we talked about a lot of them.
Yeah.
Leave your comments or hit us up on Twitter if you got other things you want to talk about. We can circle back on this.
Let me clarify that. Hit us up with reasonable things. Don't be an idiot about it. Because there are times where I feel bad being rude to people. And while it's probably my fault, I still put the blame on you.
let's do games real quick.
All right.
Raptors favored by 1.5 at Cleveland. I got the Raps.
I like Cleveland there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Basically a pick 'em. So it's
bold.
Basically my thought is Rudy Gay can't have a game as bad as he did the other night again.
Right.
A horrible, horrible game.
Right.
And Raptors fans were like, is this who he is? And Memphis fans were like, kind of. Kings are favored by 1.5 at Orlando. The Kings on the road, which I know you hate.
I do. I would take Orlando there.
Both teams on back-to-back. Kings had that double overtime amazing game versus
sure we call it amazing. Sure,
we liked it. Everyone thought it was really exciting.
It was close.
You're not impressed?
No, absolutely not.
DC and the Wizards and Pistons are a pick 'em.
I like the Wizards there.
Me too. Knicks are favored by 7 over Golden State.
That's a lot of points.
I took the Knicks just because the Warriors' defense has been so horrible that I figured, like, when it rains, it pours for New York.
Yeah.
So I feel like they gotta have like a feel good win for them.
I would take the Warriors to cover for sure.
Okay.
I don't know if I like them to win, but 7's a lot of points to the Warriors. Are still good.
They've been really bad since really a week before the All-Star break.
Yeah.
Rockets are giving 8 to Milwaukee tonight at home.
Yeah, I don't know. I like the Rockets there because I don't know that I think the Bucks will get tricked into playing their style.
And Bucks are on back-to-back.
Yeah.
Hornets are getting 13 points to the Thunder in Oklahoma City.
I would lay the points.
Really?
Yeah. I would take the Thunder here.
I picked something ridiculous. Like, on the pick system that we have, I actually had to call out the score. And so, like, I gave them, like, a huge advantage, but I think it was only, like, 12 points. So I'm still somehow taking the points. Grizzlies are giving 7.5 to Dallas tonight.
I might like that to be. Well, no, it's in Memphis.
Do what?
It's in Memphis.
Yes.
Ugh. I don't want to go anywhere near that. I have no opinion.
Spurs are giving 15.5 at home to the Suns.
The Suns won. Literally the worst game I've ever seen last night.
Oh, I wish we had more time to talk about that game, because you're following you on Twitter. I was like, what is happening?
It was the worst game I've ever seen.
Sounded bad.
And I've watched many a Johnny Flynn game. Worst game I've ever seen.
Was it one where you weren't even mad when it was over, you were just glad it was over?
I was rooting for the Wolves to lose the last 5 minutes of that game. That's how bad it was. I thought, I don't even want you guys to win at this point. If you guys pull out a victory from this, I'm going to be furious. That's how bad it was.
Because I checked the score late, and I was like, well, they're going to overtime. No. What can be so bad?
They fell into overtime. Much like you might fall into a dumpster if you're walking in an alley.
Jazz are giving 5 to the Hawks at home. I know it's the Jazz at home. I'm taking the Hawks. Hawks have been playing really well, and I really don't like where this Utah team's at.
I normally would take Utah because they're at home, but I like the way Atlanta's playing.
Yeah. And it's a pick'em game of the night, Denver versus Portland.
Pick'em? I think I'd pick the Nuggets.
I think the Blazers because of the Chaos Engine. We'll see if the Chaos Engine's got any fuel left in it tonight.
Yeah. All right. That was a fun rookie roundup.
It was. It was much more fun than actually talking about it with anyone else.
Yes, and don't tweet me about it.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, man.